This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is not the end, declared Winston Churchill in late 1942. This is not even the beginning of the end, but it is, perhaps, the end of the beginning. Cautious optimism is beginning to be heard in Baghdad in Washington, though officials are quick to emphasize the caution. After all, insurgents mount dozens of attacks every day in Iraq, and over the past few weeks, some of those assaults have been bigger and more sophisticated than before. While the leadership of a new government has taken power in Baghdad, arguments continue over allocation of cabinet positions, and doubts mount that the assembly can meet the deadline to propose a new constitution. None of the deep fissures in Iraqi society have healed. Training of Iraqi forces progresses slowly. The economy and basic services have improved but little. Even so, the number of attacks is significantly smaller. The election established a degree of political legitimacy in Baghdad, and military officials say more and more Iraqis are coming forward with tips on insurgent activities. What's happening with the insurgents, with Iraqi government forces, and, amid what may only be a lull, what's happening with the size and the role of American forces? Later in the program, a scandal in Quebec threatens the government of Prime Minister Paul Martin in Canada, and three men are indicted for planning terror attacks in New York, Washington, and New Jersey. But first, the security situation in Iraq. If you have questions about what's happening there and why, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us here in Studio 3A is retired General John Keane. He served as the Army's Vice Chief of Staff during the U.S. invasion of Iraq, was later Acting Chief of Staff. And, Jack, nice to have you back on the program.
Yeah, it's good to see you again.
Now, you were in Iraq, what, as recently as a week ago?
About 10 days ago. I finished up a two-week assessment for the military command there.
And how would you assess the situation?
Well, the political and psychological momentum certainly has turned to our favor. That's very significantly obvious when you look at what took place after the January elections. And you can see it wherever you go in the country. It manifests itself from a security perspective in terms of the number of people that are willing to cooperate with security forces throughout the country, even in the so-called Sunni triangle where many of the insurgents are in residence. So that political momentum is there. And what we don't see back here very much is the impact of the local and provincial elections as well, where they're taking office and starting to do things for the people. It's all in its beginning stages, but clearly there has been a momentum shift.
Now, everybody expected that there would be a major expansion of attacks in the weeks and months leading up to the elections in January. Is it possible that after what may have been a major effort on their part, the insurgents simply are gathering their forces again, reconstituting themselves?
Well, listen, this is a viable, resilient insurgency, and it's capable of rather dynamic surprise at any time after some coherent planning on their part. But the fact of the matter is, there were very aggressive offensive operations that the American people really didn't see much of, but it took place the weeks and months prior to the election to try to get the insurgents off of their plan. And then I think one of the things that you see when you talk to a lot of the Iraqi security force leaders and their younger soldiers as well, which I had the great opportunity to do, is they all feel good about themselves as a result of their first time stepping forward in a large way to protect their own citizenry during that election. I mean, there were 8 suicide attacks, suicide bomber attacks, 132 attacks within that 48-hour period. Most of those were protected by Iraqi security forces. So they feel good about that. But in the same breath, you cannot underestimate this insurgency and its capacity to do some real damage.
As I mentioned, there have been at least a couple of attacks that have been significantly larger than previous attacks. What do people make of that?
Well, I think that potential exists today, and it's going to continue to exist for some time. And we've got to be careful about the numbers, because the attacks have gone down, and that's certainly encouraging. But if you go back to the 04 time, about this time last year, you'll find the level of attacks about the same. They have gone down since the spike we had, a number of months ago. So in trend analysis, you have to look at the whole mosaic going all the way back, I think, to the beginning of the insurgency to clearly understand where we are. But the fact that the numbers are down, that is important. But it's not the only variable that we should measure ourselves in terms of the insurgency.
We're talking about the security situation in Iraq, how it's changed, whether it has changed significantly. Our number, if you'd like to join us, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Right now we're talking with retired General John Keane, and let's get a caller on the line. Jermaine is calling from Dyersburg, Tennessee.
Yes, hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I think the war has been going on for about 2 years now.
Right.
And I think the Americans have done a magnificent job. I don't think that people around the world not really giving the Bush administration a benefit of the doubt. I just think they've done a pretty good job in Iraq. And, I mean, look at all this happened, election. I do understand that there are casualties, and that's really, really bad. But at the end of the day, I think the Americans and the British troops and all the other foreign troops in Iraq have done a pretty good job. And it would be nice to see troop level go down to at least 100,000 by the end of the year, if that's possible. I'm not a military guy. You know, I don't really know what's...
Well, Jermaine, we have one here. General Keane, the level of American troops has come down from about 150,000 on Election Day in Iraq to about 140,000 now. Is Jermaine's estimate of maybe 100,000 by the end of the year, does that seem reasonable?
Well, I don't know what is reasonable. The command is going through the options right now. You know, what they need to do, and they're certainly doing it, is do an assessment of the current situation in terms of what is the level of the threat. And also, what is the capacity of the Iraqi security forces to assume greater responsibility? What has happened in the Iraqi security forces between the assessment I made last summer and the one I've just completed is a remarkable story. It's almost doing the impossible, frankly, and General Petraeus and all of his people deserve a tremendous amount of credit.
General Petraeus, the American in charge of
the
training
American
Iraqi
general
troops.
In charge of training the Iraqi security forces, as do the Iraqi security force leaders themselves. But it has been a dramatic improvement in the quality of those forces and also in the number of those forces, so much so that, you know, portions of Baghdad are now under the command of Iraqi security forces, and they're operating there without much assistance from coalition forces. And that's beginning to take place in other parts of the country. So as the commanders make an assessment of the level of threat and the proficiency of the Iraqi security forces, those are the main ingredients to determining when and how much they can turn over to the Iraqis and what the time frame for all of that is. And certainly the commanders are going through those assessments right now. And what we have to do is we have to base it not on a timetable that's arbitrary, but on the conditions that exist in Iraq. And there are other conditions to be considered as well, but those two are the main ones. That is, what is the threat, and what's the capacity of Iraqi security forces to assume responsibility? If we push the Iraqi security forces into this thing prematurely, we could have some pretty unsatisfactory results where they could lose confidence in themselves and also run the risk of jeopardizing the future. So that doesn't make any sense, given the investment that we've made here today.
Jermaine, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's talk now with Mark, and Mark's calling from Miami, Florida.
Yeah, General, I wonder if you had any handle on to what extent the Iraqi forces have been able to identify infiltrators into that force from the insurgency groups.
Yes, they've had some success with that. Certainly, that's on the agenda of the insurgents. Everybody is very sensitive to is the message I could give you. The Iraqis themselves, the coalition forces that are training them, you know, they attempt to vet these people before they join these forces. But obviously, that's an imperfect system at best, and there's always going to continue to be some challenges there. So we've had some success with it, but let's be realistic. There's probably some folks in those ranks who, in fact, align with the insurgents today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Do you have – we get numbers are in dispute. You say the training of Iraqi forces is going astonishingly well. How soon do you think – and I presume you talked to General Petraeus. How soon does he think that they're going to be ready in large numbers?
Well, General Petraeus has a time schedule, obviously, where he has a certain input and he gets an output from that. And, you know, in the 06 time frame, towards the summer, early winter – they'll have most of that force in place that's properly trained. And when we say properly trained, we mean this. I mean, they've organized the force. They've given them the individual skills to go out and start doing collective things together. In other words, do things as a group. And that group training that takes place actually on operations with the assistance of coalition forces with them is very critical. And sometimes we don't consider the fact that it takes weeks and months for them to get proficient at that before they could stand on and stand by themselves.
Okay. Let's talk now with Della Lem. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
Calling from Reno, Nevada. Go ahead.
Hi, General Keane.
Yes.
I'm interested. You mentioned something about the attacks in Iraq going down in number, but they seem to be increasing in magnitude. And I'm interested in hearing your answer on how you feel about, a larger attack at a smaller rate as compared to more attacks at smaller magnitude.
And I think you're referring to the attack, the coordinated attack on three sides of Abu Ghraib. What was it, a couple of weeks ago?
That's right.
A similar attack just this week out in the western part of Iraq.
That's correct, Neil.
Well, I think it's too soon to say that based on two or three attacks that we actually have a new pattern and new tactics that the insurgents are using, and certainly everybody's taking a close eye on that. The point I was making is that this insurgency is still viable. It still has tremendous resiliency. It's a dynamic organization and is capable of achieving surprise on any given day that they want to achieve that. That's the reality of it. And that shouldn't surprise us because that's the nature of insurgents to begin with. The other point is, on average, in the insurgencies that we like to look at and say that we've been successful at, the Philippines, El Salvador, and the much-studied the British success in Malaysia, all on average took 12 years. We're in the second year of this and starting to see some success.
LLM, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it. And General Keane, we wanted to thank you for joining us today.
Okay. Thank
Jack
you.
Keane, former Army Vice Chief of Staff, former Acting Chief of Staff, and he joined us here in Studio 3A. More on Iraq when we come back from the break. We'll be hearing a couple of different viewpoints. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about security in Iraq, the ongoing role of U.S. forces, and when some of them may start to be able to come home. If you have questions, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is John Pike, director of globalsecurity.org, which specializes in military and defense issues. Nice to have you back on
Good
the program,
to be here.
John. We heard cautious optimism from General Keane just back from an assessment tour in Iraq a moment ago. Would you agree?
Optimism and caution, I think that those are the two words of the day. Certainly there is grounds for optimism. If you look at American deaths in Iraq in the month of March, it was 34. That was about half what it had been in the month of February, and deaths American in Iraq in February have been about half what they were in January. So, I mean, that trend, the most visible one, is definitely in the right direction. The caution is that we saw exactly the same trend a year ago. February of last year was the same low number of deaths relative to the previous months, and then it got bad in March, and then it got really bad in April. And so I think that anybody who has seen the way the situation fluctuates from month to month would believe that, yes, having to write fewer condolence letters is definitely moving in the right direction, but it could head decisively, it could head really in the wrong direction without too much warning. So I think it's far too early to declare victory.
And those we speak to, I think this is universal, say the solutions to this crisis are political rather than military at this point. Nevertheless, the military role is absolutely critical, and security is critical to establishing a viable political system.
Right, because there's no way that you can continue to have elections the way that they did this last time around. I mean, eventually, Iraq is going to have to become a normal country, and part of that is going to be abating the insurgency. part of abating the insurgency is political. Unavoidably, part of it is military. And until the Iraqis can secure their own country, there's going to be a significant role for American troops. And I think that the general probably had it about right on, that you're going to be seeing about the same number of American troops over there for at least the next 18 months, because that's how long it's going to take simply to get the Iraqi forces up to the authorized strength. And then after that, I think people are going to be very cautious about major drawdowns in the American force level, simply because of the concern that, well, of the political and military fragility of the new government over there.
Mm-hmm. And we can look at America. Excuse me, I didn't mean to hit my microphone. But
whoops.
We can look at American forces. We can look at the Iraqi forces who are being trained up, and make some projections. What do we know about the insurgents at this point?
Well, that's really what the debate is about right now. I mean, to the extent that there is a debate about whether we need, as Secretary Rumsfeld said, a strategy for victory, which he advocates, or an exit strategy, which critics of the war advocate, really goes to the question of what you think the insurgency is all about. Secretary Rumsfeld has made it very clear that he's of the view that the insurgency that we're fighting are former regime elements, the goons from Saddam's secret police, with some foreign fighters infiltrating.
And the former head of Saddam's military bureau, the news of his arrest was announced today in
Right.
Iraq.
So in Secretary Rumsfeld's view, all we have to do is kill or capture them, and we've won. The critics' view of the war is that the insurgency may have started out that way, but right now it's basically a popular insurgency, that for every insurgent we kill or capture, one or two step forward, and our military operations are only making things worse. Certainly, if you look at the current U.S. government estimates for the size of the insurgency, we've killed or captured a bunch of them, but it's as big as it ever was. From that view, the proper role is for the United States to embark on an orderly withdrawal as quickly as possible. And so a lot of people have talked about an exit strategy to significantly draw down the American presence by the end of this year. That's what the debate's about.
Get another caller on the line. This is Dan, who's calling from Denver.
Hi. I was curious, and you guys just started touching on it a little bit just now, but regarding the emphasis so far on military action and military solutions, and how come we don't hear much these days about on the civilian front with public utilities and, you know, kind of the catchphrase of winning the hearts and minds of the Iraqis and stuff.
Well, what's been happening on that front, John Pike? I mean, the security is critical to establishing all of those things as well.
Well, it was just in the news that they had managed to bring in a new generator for Baghdad's power station. Frankly, I've been a little surprised at the absence of progress on the electrical generation front. I would have thought that they would have rounded up every spare generator they could get and get the electricity on in Iraq, because you're basically looking at two possibilities. Either the electricity is on and people are going to be inside where it's air-conditioned watching TV, or the electricity is going to be off. They're going to be outside throwing rocks at the Americans. I would have thought that getting the electricity on would have been a very high priority. And frankly, over the last 2 years, they really haven't made too much progress on that front, and it's not clear why.
Do insurgents continue to attack efforts to improve things like electricity, continue to attack infrastructure like the oil pipelines and that sort of thing?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they're trying to tear all of these things down for the very reason that the U.S. Presence and the new Iraqi government are trying to build them up. Eventually, if the insurgency is going to be overcome, it's going to be because people think that the insurgency is annoying, that the insurgents are the reasons that the air conditioning is off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that has been one of the critical efforts, and I think probably one of the reasons that we're just breaking even in terms of keeping the power on and keeping the oil flowing.
And the other factor, of course, would be the economy. And again, this is not unconnected with security issues, but if people are working, they might be too busy to be part of the insurgency.
I think that that's also another area where the reconstruction strategy has been somewhat puzzling, in the sense that there has been a preference for hiring expensive American companies rather than less expensive local labor. The country is littered with trash, and yet there have been no significant efforts to hire unemployed people to run around and scrape off graffiti and pick up the trash.
Dan, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's go now to Capitol Hill and to Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, a Democrat from California. She's just returned from a congressional fact-finding mission to Iraq, and thanks very much for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you for inviting me to be on.
We heard earlier from retired General John Keane, who was in Iraq just about the same time you were. Cautious optimism was about where he came down, if I could encapsulate it. Would you agree with that?
Very cautious optimism. And I say that because I thought that, and I still think that one of the top issues is the real training of Iraqi security forces so that we can draw down our troops and bring our young people home. And that's the point that I drove home when I was there in my meetings as well as other members of the delegation.
And what did you see that both reinforced your sense of cautious optimism, and some, what did you see that may have given you pause?
Well, first of all, this is my second visit to Iraq. My first was as part of a delegation that was the very first to have gone into Baghdad and then in northern Iraq about 2 weeks after the government fell. It is truly an armed camp now. There were many areas that I traveled in 2003 that simply cannot be traveled anymore because of the high security risk. On the point about the training of Iraqis, we met with President Mubarak, King Abdullah, before going to Iraq, and they both spoke of the offer to train, to assist the Americans with the training of Iraqis. And
they, of course, are the leaders of Egypt and Jordan, but
exactly,
go ahead.
Exactly. Very few had been trained in either country. King Abdullah spoke about the U.S. going for quantity instead of quality. President Mubarak of Egypt spoke about the very few numbers that had actually been trained there. When we met with General Petraeus, an outstanding individual who is charged with training Iraqis to take over the security of their country, he spoke of how many, close to 148,000, that, quote, had been trained. But on pressing further with him, their training is approximately 3 weeks. There is no command structure to the Iraqi security forces, and so it is my sense coming away from the meetings that we had was that we will be there longer than for a briefer period of time, because unless and until they are well trained and well equipped to actually secure their country, it simply won't happen. So I didn't come away from the meeting highly encouraged because this is very light training.
Let's get another caller on the line. Paul is calling us from Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. What I'm calling about is you're talking about the U.S. getting out of Iraq right away, you know, over the next 18 months or whatever.
Well, I haven't said any time period. I just said I would like to see our troops come home sooner rather than later.
Well, I look at it this way. How about all the other coalition troops? Isn't like Ukraine bagging it? They're getting out right away. And isn't that Italy and
Poland announced today Poland just announced today its forces would be out by early next year.
Yeah, it's not a sterling list of those that have chosen to remain. I think there are more members of the short list of the coalition that have either pulled out or set a date to pull out. I'm not one of the Democrats that has signed on to legislation for an immediate pullout because I believe the region would collapse and that Iran, who is a provocative and a serious issue in that part of the world, would stretch its less than clean hand into the region and would love to do so. But that's why the issue of training, of real training for the Iraqis to take over security is so important.
Paul, you were trying to say?
Yeah, what are we getting set up for the next war against the Iranians because they got the bomb? Is that what we're getting set up for?
What I'm saying is that Iran is a provocative player in the region. It's a country that all the surrounding countries have their eye on. They would love to continue to make problems in that region for their own purposes. And so I believe, it may not be the view, your view, or the view of others, but my belief is, my view is that if U.S. troops were to withdraw immediately and not have the Iraqi security force really ready to take over their own country, that the region would collapse.
Let's see if we can get another caller on, and this is John. John's calling from Napa, California.
Well, I think that the countries in the area, the surrounding countries, have their eye on us, and they view the United States as being provocative, frankly. And I question the administration's, like the last caller, I question the administration's commitment to withdrawal as well. We're in the process of constructing, I understand, 15 to 17 long-term expensive bases. I mean, we're still in Germany and Japan 60 years after that war, in Korea 50 years after that one. And what is, I would love to know, what is the administration's real reason for being in Iraq in the first place? And my theory is it's for securing the oil fields and giving American companies the contracts to develop these fields for the pipelines, et cetera. I don't think we have any strategy to withdraw. I think our whole motive is to be there for the long term.
Let's get a response from Congresswoman Eshoo.
Well, number one, to the caller and to anyone that's listening, I did not support and voted against occupying and going into Iraq. So that's right off the top. I think that where we are today is a result of the administration never having a plan beyond invading Iraq. And I think that the huge mistakes that were made early on, with a great deal of arrogance, I might add, really spells out why we are where we are today there. If you ask me the specific question, do I think we're going to be there longer rather than a shorter period of time, I would say a longer period of time, because the Iraqis are not prepared, regardless of what this administration is saying. The Iraqis are not prepared to take over the security of their country. They claim they've trained close to 148,000, and but that's 2 to 3 weeks training without any kind of command structure. So I'm not defending in any way, shape, or form what the administration has done, both in terms of its policy to go in, whatever that was, which has not stood up, or what they are saying today, which is less than really the case that I saw when I was there.
Congresswoman Eshoo, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Anna Eshoo, a Democrat from California. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And John Pike is still with us from globalsecurity.com.
.org,
excuse me. You wouldn't want to make a profit there,
no,
would you? No, of course not. I did want to ask you, as this goes forward, one of the questions asked is about the change in what may be a change in Iraqi tactics. Larger attacks, mentioned Abu Ghraib, the other attack out. Aren't insurgents, whenever they gather in larger forces, making themselves available to the vulnerable to the Americans' greatest asset, air power?
Well, I think that is certainly an interesting possibility here. You do have to wonder what is provoking them into gathering in large numbers, because on the face of it, it would seem that would be a losing strategy for them. It would basically just be an opportunity presenting a much larger target that appeals to American firepower, ground-based and air-based. It's unclear at this point what they think they're accomplishing by doing this, and we're just going to have to look over the next several weeks and see whether they continue to do it.
As you look at their tactics, suicide bomb attacks, the improvised explosive devices, the roadside bombs, that sort of thing, would there be any reason to go away from the tactics that had proven successful in the first 2 years of the insurgency?
Well, on the face of it, it would seem to me that either it's a statement of strength, that they think that they can now go on the offensive in large unit in basically transitioning from a guerrilla war to a conventional war, or it's a statement of weakness, that they think that their old tactics are not working and they're going to have to pull something new. I'd have to say that the details of these attacks at this point are sufficiently hazy that it would be a little difficult to second-guess it from this distance.
John Pike, thanks very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
John Pike is director of globalsecurity.org, which tracks some military movements, not just in Iraq, but in many other places around the world. And he was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from a short break, we will switch our attention to north of the border, where scandal is rocking Canadian politics. Plus, three men in England are indicted in connection with alleged plots against U.S. financial institutions. Remember the alert that went out last August? We'll have details about what the indictment is when we come back from a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.